love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings. It's the automatic bleed of the husband, as you expect. First thing, Jim Leonard apparently went into surgery at 7:30 this morning, and I haven't heard a thing since, so I am concerned. This could mean that things are fine. He's recovering, and they're just busy with that. But, you know, Sharon Leonard apparently only has 25% of her lung capacity. She has obviously some weakness because of that. And so I don't know what's going on. So I did send a card today, again, to my wife with the suggestion that obviously recommend she pray for Jim and Sharon and even perhaps call Sharon because they have had a relationship. They know each other. I just think that would be some encouragement. I saw something yesterday. It's a report on RT, and I thought it was one of the best done on the subject. It was called Neo-Nazi Battalion Reportedly Training Ukrainians Against Russia. I'll leave you the link. I find it fascinating because I've seen that and I've seen others, you know, notably the two opposites, Al Jazeera. And talking about this idea, because what apparently is happening, because I've heard this now from multiple sources, is there is an effort to promote the neo-Nazis. The neo-Nazis are basically, because again, if you go back about 100 years, a good number of people within lots of places in Europe, including Ukraine, what was, you know, the modern day Ukraine at the time, sided with the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Again, remember, Nazi is simply a derogatory term placed externally on them. They call themselves the National Socialists. There are groups like that all over, including in Germany still, and most of them are basically termed neo-Nazi, as in the new version of the Nazis. They promote various things, notably about a superiority of a particular group. But of course, there is a reasonable amount of support that they're getting. From where? A lot of it apparently is externally funded and promoted by others who want to instill tension. So a lot of it a lot of the financial resources are coming from various European governments, the U.S. government, you know, especially the intelligence committee and related organizations. In order to have at least the appearance of tension. Because if you have the appearance of tension, you can say, oh, look, there's a problem here. We need to prepare for war. And that is the concern. Because there is, I think I mentioned this previously, there is no threat of a Russian invasion. It's simply not there. As the Russians have even said, the U.S. specifically, but in Ukraine, will do a false flag in order to start a war. Where basically nobody wins. It's a lose-lose situation if we do that. Have we done that before? Oh, yeah. You know, the gentleman... That gentleman has a very makes some very good arguments that basically every single war the U.S. has been in, including the Revolutionary War, is based on false flags or some very a form of deception. I mean, there are the clear ones. There's the admitted one of the Vietnam War. I mean, that's admitted. There's no denying that. There's the admitted of the Iraqi invasion. Obviously, the incubator babies thing, total fraud. The weapons of mass destruction that caused the invasion of Iraq, that was total fraud. And apparently, the evidence is known total fraud. Again, our entry into Afghanistan to get bin Laden, again, total fraud, because he was in Pakistan. We knew that. We were negotiating with Pakistan to get him. So, no, I mean, it's fraud. World War I is also clear. World War II is clear, too, because we provoked the Japanese in order to get us into the war in Europe. And we knew, you know, beforehand, we moved the Pacific Fleet from San Diego to Pearl Harbor in order to set up an easy target. I mean, these things are just history, but we don't want to talk about it because that doesn't make America look good. So we don't say that. But are we doing it again? Why is that a concern? Because I have kids. I remember talking with a gentleman who spoke about I have a call from Sharon Leonard. I'll be back to you. Greetings again. This is a, obviously, I had an interruption. That was Sharon Leonard. And Jim apparently was a bit feisty. And apparently has become confused, perhaps because of some of the drugs they gave him during the surgery. That's an issue. They're hoping it'll wear off in some hours. Apparently he is resting now. And, my plan, I just expressed, I will go there tomorrow, you know, because again, when I was in that room yesterday, it reminded me of the apartment I was in at Daybreak. It's a small room, and it's one thing to be there overnight, to be there for a long time. It's like being in prison, and it'll drive you nuts. And obviously he lives on a whole bunch of acres, small house, but a whole bunch of acres. So he has a whole lot more land than I do here. And of course, I mention how often, how important it is for me, the place I live, to be able to walk outside, walk around the property, and, see trees, see birds, see turtles, and not a sea turtle, but see a turtle, and see deer. You know, to have deer in the front yard is just marvelous. But anyway, the other thing I was mentioning to you is the concern I have about the saber rattling. And I was mentioning a gentleman that I talked with who at the time, this was several years ago, but there was the alleged chemical attack, the first one at Khanshakun, then at Duma. In both cases, this was during the Trump administration, we fired missiles into Syria. What we did was an act of war. We had no involvement in this. No American citizen was attacked. We simply, on our own initiative, said, you did something wrong, and we're going to send missiles into your country to stop you. The problem is the evidence for both simply isn't there. The idea that it was indeed a false flag is abundantly clear, especially the second one, the Duma attack. It is abundantly clear. And what happens is the people who pointed this out with the OPCW that I've mentioned many times were removed. When the one gentleman went to testify before the UN, the United States would not let him come into the country in order to be face-to-face, so he did it electronically. And made the one presentation, and then the U.S. and somebody else, U.K. or somebody else, walked out of the meeting. They didn't participate. So that idea of ignoring the evidence because you don't want to see, because you have an objective, is a big, really big concern. A second way to see this, I'll give you another link because I watched a video. Again, I watch while I eat. A gentleman, James Corbett, he has a thing called the Corbett Report. He's an excellent presenter. I actually sent the DVDs, the thing about the Federal Reserve, and I sent you a couple other ones. Did I send you the one, History of World War One? Or anyway, he's done some excellent long-form documentaries, and he has a bunch of weekly things. But he did one today, and he interviewed Denis Rancourt, which is a gentleman from Canada that I've mentioned many times, who is also extremely informative. He is the one in Canada who for years has, he was a professor, removed from his university because he's politically incorrect. He has pointed out the fallacy of anthropomorphic global warming or climate change by showing evidence. And you got to silence people like that. He came out 2 years ago with a very detailed study showing masks are useless. Far more detailed than what I express, showed masks are useless. And the thing that he's championed is noticing the all-cause death rate. Because, again, in 2020, basically around the world, there was no spike. So there's no pandemic. He explained it a little further today because somebody, New York Times or Wall Street, somebody came out and said a million extra deaths. But that is not calendar year. I don't think it was calendar year, but either way, in the U.S. But, you know, as it's been pointed out, as I tried to point out before, around the world, basically there's no spike. The predominant spikes has been New York and California. New York, it was obvious because they took healthy, elderly people and within a nursing home and did a lot of things to inspire their deaths, such as put sick people with them and isolate them, because isolation is a killer. You might have heard me say this before. Isolation is a killer. It's the reason that I went to Jim Leonard yesterday and probably will do it again tomorrow, because isolation is a killer. And this has been demonstrated for decades. Apparently, and it seems to be, if I got it correct, during the end of 2020, and the peak of 2021 during the summertime, there was a huge amount of deaths. I guess the evidence is still unclear how much was due to vaccines, but the various lockdowns and things of that nature had an extremely high spike of deaths. And what were the common characteristics? Because it wasn't across the country, it was in specific areas. Common characteristics. The group of people were in lower income, obese, poor health, and so forth. And then during the heat, all those things came together. And you add the emotional stress and things of that nature, there was a bunch of extra deaths. You know, as it's been basically fairly clear, 2020, basically very little except what was promoted, and then 2021 has been significant. Again, the exact numbers and the timing and so forth is he has a report. It's there. I'll try to remember to link that too. And I'll give you the link to the point is, You may have heard somebody say, about 2 years ago, the mask is the armband of 100 years ago, and I stand by that. The evidence is overwhelming. That's why I refused to wear a mask yesterday in the hospital. And the purpose behind COVID-19 is money, power, eugenics, and the way you do eugenics is genocide. And we're seeing it happen. My concern with all this when I was at the hospital yesterday, good example, I remember interacting with that one nurse, a receptionist, and, you know, the way she told me, go down that way to the elevator and there's a station there where you can get a mask. She was semi-emphatic in that. And I think about it. If you are trained, this is what you should do because, and they use this idea of the science says so. Oh, well, then let me encourage people to wear a mask because we want to protect them. We want to protect grandma. You hear that over and over again. And we're professionals because the science says this. The problem is the scientists, the administrators, and so forth say it. There's no science to back it up. It is, the term mantra is used, or what's attributed to Hitler, but actually comes from Winston Churchill. Say a big lie and repeat it often. It's exactly what's happening today. It's the exact same thing. So there's the big lie going on. A mask will protect you. It is a big lie. If you point it out, you will be persecuted because you're going against the flow. You're saying the emperor has no clothes. Don't do that. If you point out, you know, and the same thing is true with the vaccine and that pointed at, and I don't know how much. I think it's going to probably take many more months before we find out the impact of the vaccine on the overall death count. Well, actually, that's not true. There is already an impact because the insurance companies are saying, we got a problem. Because again, the 18 to 45 or 18 to 64 age bracket where they make their money, these people are dying at, was it a 40% higher rate than before? Or and as Denis Rancourt points out, you know, the death rate for young people under 15 and so forth is basically zero for, you know, flu or flu-related illnesses. And they're dying like crazy right now. Young people dying like crazy. There's a problem. And it's not because of a novel coronavirus. It's genocide. And again, as I point out, I got to repeat that idea. The way to kill a lot of people is you don't kill them today. You take the shot, literally, and have it make have an impact a couple years from now. And I really wonder, a few years from now, if we're going to see a huge die-off around the world and in the U.S., and will that include my family? It is a really big deal. Again, I'm only vaguely understanding the idea of what it does to the immune system in the sense that things like it turns the generic antibodies into specific and things of that nature, which reduces the overall ability for you to naturally defend. But I'm fairly clear on the idea of the microclots. And that's a big problem. It's a really big problem. It's again, if I took the vaccine, my walking is over. No doubt. I have no doubt my walking is over because more than half of the people who take the vaccine have microclots. And I'm also over 40. My concern is just like you see what's happening. It's also the change of language. Remember, herd immunity is when people have become sick and developed antibodies. And now the definition has changed. I mean, you can find this, look at the definition of herd immunity. That's when enough people have been exposed to the virus, built up the antibodies, and therefore it reduces the number of potential carriers, and you end up with herd immunity. This changed now, the changed definition to most people are vaccinated. They changed the language. And this is done, again, the same thing with cases. Cases where it used to be when somebody's sick, now it's somebody tests positive. And they use a test that has a massive number of false positives. Depending upon how it's done, it's well over 90%. But again, the primary issues, obesity, vitamin D, and whatever. You're just plain weak. It has nothing to do with you're unvaccinated. That's a fraud. And my concern is the impact on my family. But so you have the health concern. There's also the deception concern, just like we talked about the war, the beating of the war drums, and about Ukraine. And I mean, I've seen interviews. It's fascinating. Again, they show the neo-Nazi group. They did. They showed it in the one video there. They showed a older lady holding a rifle, laying on the ground holding a rifle, and another soldier, doing the training to show that these people are concerned and they're preparing because their country's going to be invaded. And there's some other pictures, basically the same group. Another picture of a younger lady being trained. And they specifically had the soldier facing the other way because he had an arm patch. He's a neo-Nazi. So what you're seeing is the neo-Nazis training, and they use those images in order to instill the idea that these people are living in fear of the Russians coming in. And apparently, from what I stand, you go to Kiev, you go to the most places in Ukraine, life's going on as normal. Because, I mean, again, most of these people are very familiar with the Russian culture or are of the Russian culture themselves. They don't feel the threat. It's external. It's like the external threat that has happened to Syria, to Iraq. It's being fostered on Iran and so forth. And Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan is, anyway. But, there's no communications. It's deception. Because worse good business. Remember what was the movie Schindler's List? Because one of the things that was really delivered well was the one scene where the main character, Schindler, was talking with, I think he was talking with his wife, and said, Do you know what it was? I've had so many businesses that didn't quite work well, and now things are working well. What is the difference? And the way he said it, war. War is good business. War is good business, obviously, for a few. A lot of people die. But for a few, it's really good business. Do you think people would promote war for good business? Yeah, we don't care about them. We're going to make some good money. Apply that idea to, the corporate environment. one of the things, because I had a conversation with Nirav today. He's back from India. And we talked a little bit about the culture there. And what's happening, of course, because obviously I see it very clearly. The major players, Gilbarco, Wayne, those two mainly. I don't know how much Bennett, but anyway, what they do is they make these devices that they sell for thousands of dollars. You put in the store to control their gas pumps. And they use a variety of techniques to lock you out. So you have to use their system. A number of these things, because I could describe it. I've pointed it out. I've developed a number of techniques to work around them. But you have to want to work around them. But again, the objective, these are big businesses, multi-billion dollar businesses. And what they want to do is keep out the small players like us. So there is the potential, especially in the coming weeks, they may win. But, you know, my focus is elsewhere. And Lord willing, you know, another example from what I understand, Trudeau in Canada has implemented a lot of people are saying illegal, but he's done it anyway, you know, draconian measures where people who, because again, what's happened is people who use Facebook, Twitter, and so forth, or their cell phones, just to communicate the idea that we stand with the truckers and against the vaccine mandates. People like that are being tagged. I've seen videos of people, the police come to their homes with a document saying, you did this. Basically what they're saying is, you did this and we know. And apparently now they've gone to people who have contributed money or something of that nature to the various organizations and shut down people's bank accounts or seized most of their money. Part of the reason behind, again, part of the reason behind the idea of the Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies, people are saying, oh, look, here's an opportunity. We should shift to this so our money won't be stolen. It's deception. Because all it's doing is getting people used to doing electronic transactions rather than cash. Because an electronic transaction now is traceable and you can turn it off. But you get people to switch over, and so what? A whole bunch of people make a bunch of money on Bitcoin and then you collapse it. A few years from now, it'll probably get collapsed because they'll switch to the central bank issued digital currencies because people will be used to it. And all Bitcoin is advertising for them. And it concerns me because you see what's happened and what the problem is, just like happened in Afghanistan. Some thing about, well, I get paid, then I go to the store to buy food to eat. Now I can't buy food. I mean, it was very real in Afghanistan, and apparently to a significant degree still is. It hit Canada. You think about the U.S.? If you're not in line, there are alternatives. You know, see, there was apparently one of the most successful things, and this was done on paper, was called Ithaca Credits, Ithaca Dollars, or something of that nature, from Ithaca, New York. There was a man who spearheaded this. He was the marketer, and he got a whole bunch of people to print up money, so they had a local currency. Apparently, it was quite successful. A whole lot of transactions were done with that. But he stepped away from the scene for whatever reason. And apparently it's kind of slowed or stopped. I don't know. And that's the problem. Because shofar coin is a cure. One of many possible. You know, the Ithaca dollars, whatever it was. Because that's simply paper. That's very low tech. Very doable. Shofar coin is a little more high tech. But again, the objective is you use it. Cheap electronic device. It doesn't do any other... you could use, you know, a regular cell phone or whatever, or just simply an identifying device. And it could be something where it's same idea of the shofar book. You take a $10 cell phone and you wipe it out, you brick it. And the only thing it does is it's a shofar coin wallet and you have no IDs. So you actually have, in a sense, the cash in your hand. Nothing traced. It is basically like handling coin. No tracing. But who's got the courage and the love to say, I'll get behind this and drive this? I got the technology. I don't have somebody who says, yes, let's do this. In the meantime, the people in Afghanistan, a whole bunch of people, got really hungry. It looks like it's going to happen in Canada over the coming days or weeks. And it's coming here. It is coming here. And I don't know what to do about it. But, you know, because again, I reach out to people. Reaching back, besides the one with the gentleman at moneyasdebt.net, Paul Grignon. Because it takes commitment. My family would understand that because you don't see that role model in my family. Well, except for one member. Who was it? Oh, yeah. The husband and dad. Who's committed to his wife and children. Even though his wife has turned to the state to isolate me from her and our children. So, you want an example of commitment? It's here. It's not there. I am concerned because the same technique of deception, the false flags, changing of language, changing of meaning, it's in the institutional church. And you cannot go against the system, or the system is going to destroy you. The difference between something medical, something financial, something related to war and so forth, is you're going to have a little problem in the sense of, well, it's power and so forth that are driving people. But there is a fundamental obedience to Christ and all of that. But when it comes to the institutional church, especially one that points to Christ, now you got a real problem. Because just like it's trust the science is the mantra, but what they're saying is trust the scientists or trust the authorities, because they don't have any science behind it. So when you trust your pastor, you trust your institutional church, you trust your denomination, you don't have the Lord behind it. Because to back it up from Scripture, I'm sorry, you have some problem. Again, what, you know, it is remarkable. Again, the idea of changing the meaning of herd immunity, the idea of changing the meaning even vaccine was changed. Because, you know, a vaccine before was the idea of basically giving you a mild version of a particular disease, so your immune system can say, oh, I recognize that, so I'll be prepared for it. Now it literally uses the mRNA technology. It literally changes you. You know, when you get these so-called spike proteins that tens of trillions are stuck into you with that injection, they go throughout your body and they stay there. And a virus does not reproduce. It has to enter a cell. When the cell reproduces, it reproduces the virus. It reproduces the virus, the spike protein. Spike protein grabs a, you know, a blood cell coming by, and you end up with a microclot. Do that in large numbers, and you die. But, so, the institutional church, you know, again, I continue to study the language. One of the things, and I'm trying to get this clear, because if you look at words, well, take something politically correct right now, the anti-vaxxer. What does that mean? You take vax or vaccine and anti, against, and you put those two words together to form a new word. And people say, oh, I understand what that means because I understand what a vaccine is and I understand what anti is. So you put those two together and you make a new word. Greek is the same way. And it is fascinating. Again, one of my favorite words, sum perikaleo, which is basically three words put together. Together or with near and call. So those words put together, and you frequently see it translated as mutually encourage or mutually comfort or together comfort. It's a remarkable thing to see. So by understanding how the word is made, a very good one, because I had this discussion with somebody, you know, it was one of these situations where, you know, answer fool according to folly, answer not a fool, because, you know, because again, you can't reason with a fool, whether you respond or you don't, you're not going to win. But, you know, so I had that situation because this one person talked about another person who was an evangelist. And we have this idea that an evangelist is someone who goes out and brings people to Christ to make a conversion and so forth. That's not what it means. It's simply not what it means. That was my understanding. I've talked with a whole bunch of people for years about it. Oh, yeah, evangelist. Somebody goes out and makes conversions. Again, the Matthew 23, you go across halfway around the world to make a single proselyte or conversion and make him twice the son of the devil as you are. So, I mean, you have that idea. Plus, what does evangelist mean? Evangelist starts, it's you, you, which is good, and angelos, which is where we have angel or messenger, which is actually go speak, or go with words. So, you are to go with words and speak something good. You are to deliver the message of good news. That's what an evangelist is. If you're a follower of Christ, proclaiming the gospel is evangelism. It is not there to make a conversion. It is simply an obedience to Christ, proclaiming obedience to Christ. That's all it is. It is not a particular job or whatnot. We've distorted the language. It's like taking the house of the Lord, okios theos, and over a lot of twisting with languages and so forth. You can see the lights in the my because there's a car coming down the driveway. what you've done is you've taken house of the Lord, and through some going through different languages, you end up with eventually Kirche in German, which is literally house of the Lord, or church in English. But again, because church over time has been mutated, so house of the Lord, or the building, which is what it is now the second definition, the people are the third, and the institution is the first in most dictionaries. So we've changed the meaning of the words, but, you know, house of the Lord is indeed the building. But where's the call to build one? And then there is the idea of, again, ekklesia. Ek, out. Kaleo, call. Called out. I recently, in a friendly jab between another gentleman that I interact with who does know Greek, and he said, oh, I'm going to be talking with my friends at the, and he wrote in Greek, my ekklesia. And I responded to him and said, oh, is that an ekklesia or a synagoge, where we get synagogue? Because again, neither one of those words has a, which you might call a religious significance. Because again, James 2:2 uses synagoge to talk about a Christian community. Acts 19 uses ekklesia to talk about a mob. So, I mean, the evidence is there. But it's like pointing out there's no evidence that a mask does any good to prevent the spread of an airborne virus. Zip, none. It is completely useless. It shows submission. Going to the institutional church shows submission. It's not obedience to Christ. The call to gather together. I heard an excellent point made. You gather together with those of like mind. You gather together with family. It's like when we gather together as a family, I used to do that. It was people that were you were close and intimate with. That's the gathering. To go and say, everybody come. What a lot of institutional churches, you're all welcome. Because they want to get you in with the hope of converting you, right? Or at least get you into the club and your revenue source. And of course, we look better when we have a bigger building because we have a whole bunch of goats. But within a family, a Christian family, family in the sense of, you know, not biological family, but a group of people who meet together. The bond is we have a relationship. We know each other. Strangers aren't welcome to that. You don't simply say, oh, let's go to this house and have dinner. No, you don't do that. So anyway, I thought that was the way it was presented was done well. It looks like Jim Leonard came out of surgery. He's having some problems with his mind right now because apparently the anesthesia impacted him. And hopefully, Lord willing, he'll recover from that. And then tomorrow, he'll need somebody to interact with. And as I pointed out, Jim and I are very different. We don't have that strong bond in the sense the way I can talk for hours with Chris. But he's my brother. And I have an opportunity to be his friend. Because normally he's in Ducktown. He's way east of me. I can't get there in an hour. I can get to the hospital in 30 minutes. Apparently, Sharon said that he was concerned because I left at about 5 o'clock and said, oh my, how long does it take him to get home? It's going to be cold. You know, because, well, it's 2 miles, so it was 30 minutes. It wasn't a problem. And I stopped 3 places on the way home, too. So and it was quick, so not a problem. But it was cool. But see, the issue is, I'll dress warm because I need to go see Jim. Because, as I pointed out, one of the big killers related to COVID-19 is not COVID-19. Low in vitamin D, obese, many other things, loneliness. he is in a sense in a prison cell. Not quite like some of the SAMS facilities, like the one that probably Daniel Hale is in right now, and it's been so for months. But he is in a modestly sized room, alone. What a privilege, what a joy, what an honor to go there and spend time with him. There was a young lady, teenage girl, that I fell in love with, who at least gave the impression that she fell in love with me. We committed our lives together, so as long as we both had breath, we'd be there for each other. Doris Jane, my lady, I have breath, and I'm here for you. I love you, and I want you back.